Welcome to What's Cooking in Hell's Kitchen, the officially unofficial podcast for Daredevil on Netflix. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
Smelling it?
Smelling what's cooking.
Smelling what the Punisher's cooking?
Smelling like rotten meat district.
Yeah. All the bad shit goes down in the meat packing district.
Nothing good happens in meat. The best case scenario, meat gets packed.
I think best case scenario, you come out as a boxing superstar. Frankly.
Oh, okay. That's true.
A la Rocky.
That's true.
But the rest of it is all bad.
Yeah. Fighting out of the meat district, Rocky Balboa. that's not like as like a corner. That's like he actually had to fight his way out of the meat district.
Literally, yeah.
So yeah,
bust some heads. So we just watched season 2, episode 1, called Bang.
Why is it called Bang? I don't get it.
Okay, what did you think?
So I was allowed. As we got like 10 minutes into the episode, I started like, okay, I'm going to have to settle in, and they're clearly going to lay a lot of plot for what's going to happen next. So I'm just going to be patient. And then with about 10 minutes to go, it kicked into Daredevil gear, and I was suppressed. I didn't expect that the Punisher and Daredevil would have a meet in the very first episode.
Right.
I didn't.
I'm super happy, though, that it happened.
And I am, too, because, oh, my God, if I had to endure 3 episodes of you disliking a mystery that you already knew the answer to, I was going to lose my mind. So It works out for everybody. It was going to be the first 4 episodes of Fargo all over again.
What did I say on Fargo?
You hated the fact that everybody was looking for Rye, and we knew where Rye was and what happened.
Right.
With Rye.
I just don't think that if you don't do anything with that, it doesn't service the viewer. And I feel like they kind of fucked that up in this first episode. Mm. I think if they had done something interesting with it, maybe it would have worked for me. But I as a viewer, and maybe this is because I'm connected to the TV stuff because I podcast about it, but I as a viewer knew the Punisher was a single man and that Punisher was not a group or a they. It was a he. So that reveal was not interesting or exciting to watch it kind of unravel.
Well, yeah, but like, I mean, what's your stance on like historical fiction then, where you know broadly what's going to happen at the beginning and end, and you're just kind of seeing people's reactions to events that you know or how are going to unfold? I mean, that's how so you're coming from it from a person who's seen the trailers and all
right,
that stuff.
Yeah,
but it would be kind of ballsy, and maybe we can get to that in this internet generation, it'd be kind of ballsy to expect every viewer to know that going in. So a single episode where you spend...
Every viewer, yeah, but your intention is to get them to know what the thing is about. Like, all the previews show the Punisher.
But what I'm saying is, like, if a person comes into here, it's like, oh, I binge season 1, and I'm ready for season 2, I'm going to watch season 2, they probably haven't seen all the trailers, and they're this... And also, not everyone knows who the Punisher is, and Frank Castle, and I feel like it's fine... I guess I feel like it's not a big deal to watch other characters struggle through a mystery that I already know the answer to.
I just wish they would do something for me as a viewer. Like, if he were making bad decisions based on that information and I was going, oh, God, he's making the wrong choice here.
Sure.
That works for me as a in-the-know viewer, whereas it still works for a person who doesn't know anything about it.
So how would you introduce the character of the Punisher?
Well, I don't want to spitball a better script than the guys who spent weeks doing this,
I
wish there was a little bit more to it.
All
and
right.
That's really the only complaint I have with this episode.
Uh-huh.
And they, like I said, I'm glad they got to a Punisher Daredevil meet in the first episode because that's over with.
Yeah.
And now it seems like it might be balls to the wall.
Yeah, it's almost like now I'm concerned the other direction. Like, this first meeting was so titanic and so brutal and so decisive.
Yeah.
Like, how many more episodes are they going to clash, and how are they going to keep that fresh and believable?
Well, it feels like maybe this taught Daredevil something. I don't know. We haven't seen his reaction
how
yet.
How to catch a bullet.
In your teeth? Did he catch it in his teeth?
So, you want to hear a theory?
Okay.
I feel like, because we tried to watch this a bunch of times and they cut it so quick, and you can't really frame by frame Netflix, at least I don't know a way to do it.
You're talking about the very end when he
shoots
very
end.
Daredevil, yeah.
As I feel like that we're going to find out that Matt put his hand up in reflex, and also because he's a badass, the bullet went through that layer of Kevlar and armor, and it slowed and his hand.
Yeah.
And it slowed it enough that it didn't make it through his helmet.
That sounds right. I mean, they made a lot of to-do about body armor in this episode. Foggy mentions it. They cop rolls a guy over and says, body armor thick as my dick, or whatever.
Right. And that's the thing, like, that's Frank's. If Frank's got a rifle that does that, fine, but his fucking handgun's not going to go through that kind of body armor. And maybe it's a super powerful Punisher bullet, but... And it can get through a person's... But yeah, I think that's how it's going to go down. Because they very clearly showed Matt raising his hand right into the line of fire. But also, it does seem like he got hit in the head. And, you know, did he get a concussed from that? Is he going to be, like, more or less fully functional? Is he going to be able to grab onto a building? And, I mean, I don't think they're going to start episode two with Daredevil being dead.
No,
and
of course
it's now
not.
The Frank Castle show, but I mean,
yeah, but I do think it taught him something, right? He went up against the Punisher, didn't really realize what he was going up against, and he's like, "Oh fuck," because he got his ass sort of beat at the beginning.
Sure, and that was kind of surprising. That really shows you what a badass Frank Castle is. Now, I guess just us mentioning his name and his moniker is somewhat of a spoiler.
Okay,
but that's all we're going, you know, we talked about in a preview podcast, and, you know, like, if you know about the Punisher, then you know about the Punisher. If you don't, well, buckle up, you're about to find out. I'm not going to give, like,
spoil the plot at all.
No, and who knows, that's the beauty of the Marvel universe, is you can play a lot with a character's origins and backstories and motivation and what events shapes, you know, because you got Captain America was born in World War II and he's still relevant in 2016.
Yeah.
And you got Spider-Man who's had, like, you know, gone through several different origin stories, and not to mention the tangled, convoluted history of, like, Deadpool and Wolverine. So who really knows? Like, they really got a blank slate to define exactly what they want with this Punisher played by Jon Bernthal, which we didn't really get a good... many good clear shots at him, but I thought he was a force of nature.
Yeah, it felt real scary when he walks into especially that hospital.
Oh, and that, like, the way he disarms that cop just brutally and casually, and then, like, with that smooth motion throws his handgun into the wastebasket. It just was... the choreography on the show is so tight.
It is, yeah. The fight scene that ensues afterward is also equally amazing.
So we should probably back up a little bit and talk about the establishment, now that we've, you know, talked about the money shots in the episode. They established a couple things, that it is super hot in Hell's Kitchen.
Over 100 degrees all day, every day.
And you can see, you know, a lot of main characters are mostly Foggy, actually, is getting all pity and sweaty.
Yeah.
Matt Murdock is cool, so of course he doesn't. And, you know, Karen's not running around like a sweaty horse, but it's mostly Foggy. Foggy is fat and chubby and down on his luck with women, and he's sweating up a storm. So this works as a metaphor level, right? That they're turning up the heat in Hell's Kitchen.
Yeah.
That Daredevil, you know, that the Fisk is still in custody, and there's this big power vacuum, and the Dogs of Hell.
Yeah.
Okay, that makes sense because they're in Hell's Kitchen. The Dogs of Hell, a motorcycle gang, the Irish soccer hooligans.
Dog fighting
gang. It's all about dogs. It's dogs and hell and some combination thereof.
It's dogs and heat. And I do like how they
Maybe
they
the Devil Dogs.
Off.
Frank Castle's a former Marine. You got the Devil Dogs in there. It's just all a bunch of hell-themed canines, and they're coming to blows in Hell's Kitchen.
I do like in the beginning where they talk about how hot it is and the heat wave and stuff. They also have, like, a lot of people arguing and shouting, and it shows you that, you know, the tensions are rising, because when it gets real hot that's what happens.
Yeah. So I also liked how they show how Foggy and Matt's relationship has continued to develop, that, you know, Foggy is really worried about Matt, but kind of resigned that he's going to do what he's going to do, but also emboldened to maybe go a little further than he would if him and Matt were just lawyers. Do you think that he goes to the Dogs of Hell's lair and calls out their leadership, demanding to talk to Schmitty?
Yeah, maybe not. Maybe not if he doesn't have Matt on his side and doesn't know who Matt is.
Yeah, because it's like, you know, I feel like maybe Foggy would be, well, we do what we do, but what are you going to do? Mm. But now that he sees his buddy is like, hey, remember that one girl who you wanted to send to the women's shelter? Well, she was going to get chopped to pieces except for I came in there. I thought that was an interesting touch. He broke both the dude's arms, left him in traction, and pinned the restraining order to his chest.
Uh-huh.
Like, what the fuck? I mean,
that's his calling card.
Well, I'm just thinking, like, surely the police were called, the emergency uh-huh. services were called, and they see this legal document from the law offices of Nelson and Murdoch, and you start making connections. Like, is that the smartest thing in the world to do?
No. No, it's certainly not.
I mean, you know what I mean? So it's like, okay, maybe you beat the shit out of him, and then the next morning you show up as her lawyer and say, this is your restraining order, mm-hmm. asshole, and serve him in the hospital. Yeah. Pinning it to that, that's a little Rorschach-y.
It is. Normally, except when you leave a calling card, you don't sign it.
It'd be like if Rorschach is pinning that shit to people, and he also has a Rorschach Industries, you know, in the meatpacking district.
Right,
right. With that symbol, like, as his, you know, shingle outside his door. It's like, don't do that, Matt. What the hell? You're a lawyer. You're supposed to be smarter than that.
There's also when they're talking about this new girl that he's dating or went out on a date with and is mm-hmm. no longer dating.
Yeah.
She gave him a hug.
Like a cousin.
I'll call you. Yeah. Good stuff. Foggy's always funny. I like yeah. it.
He's great.
But he told Karen that Matt has a drinking problem. That
yes,
and then later in this episode they go to the bar and he's drinking a beer and Karen doesn't say anything about it, which
well, yeah.
is a little surprising to me. Like, she doesn't even like raise an eyebrow
yeah.
that this man with a drinking problem is now out with them at a bar drinking.
they I'd do kind of play that oddly for laughs.
Yeah.
Do you think I wonder if we're supposed to understand that that's Foggy kind of busting Matt's balls. Like,
maybe,
if you don't figure out a way to better sit, I'm going to start telling wild, crazy rumors.
It could be, certainly.
Because Matt treated it like, that's a terrible story. Uh-huh. It's like, well, what do you want me to tell you? Dress up like a devil and beat people up at night?
Okay, that works. Speaking of which,
mm-hmm.
going out and beating people up at night, when does this man sleep?
Okay, so I have this theory, right?
Okay.
That there's like a core crime time in the city.
Crime time, yeah.
Crime time. And it's like nobody commits crime before like 2 o'clock in the morning, yeah? Like, that seems like that's what they always tell NFL rookies.
If you're smart.
Like, nothing yeah. good happens after 1 a.m. Like, if you know, that's right. it's you always get in trouble trying to chase the night because then you start getting involved in all the other ne'er-do-well elements.
Yep.
So I'm thinking that Matt works in the office till 6 or 7, goes home. The big problem is he never goes out with them, right?
Right.
So he goes home, power naps until midnight, 1 o'clock, wakes up, beats the shit out of people, and then probably sluices the blood off his body, puts on a suit, and goes.
So his schedule is 2 a.m. to 5 p.m.
Yeah,
and then he sleeps the rest of the day.
Yeah.
I can buy that. Yeah.
Yeah, because I feel like that most of the really terrible crime must happen in the wee hours of the morning.
Probably, yeah.
I mean,
under the cover of darkness.
I'm sure that's not universally true. I'm sure there's a lot of stuff happening.
But if you're going for the, if you're playing the percentages,
yeah.
I think as a superhero who can't be everywhere at once.
Yeah. You gotta go at the worst parts, you know. Mm-hmm. Daylight, obviously, you know, crime happens during the day, but not the kind of stuff that he's familiar with.
Speaking of crime,
concentrated on
this burglary that we start off with is meant to show Daredevil doing his thing,
yeah.
show us that he's out there now, kicking ass, taking names, but not killing people. It's supposed to be juxtaposed against this very violent shootout at the Irish Club,
sure,
which is like the next scene. Very ill-conceived plan for escape at this burglary. Can I just say? We're just going to hoof it. Yeah. We're going to steal these cases and we're going to hoof it.
I mean, I guess they could have shown us where they tried to get out of the car, but they picked a shitty car and it wouldn't start, or I don't know.
Right. And I'm not complaining too much about it. I just noticed it and it was kind of funny.
Yeah. Like these guys, I mean, this is like.
I believe that criminals would be this dumb.
This is a scene from another era, though. Like, dudes in ski masks running on foot with pistols and suitcases.
Uh-huh.
Like, it's very almost quaint. Like, that's something that would be just at home in an 80s.
Yeah, heist movie. It's
Exactly.
Sure.
Exactly. The other big development is that we see that Nelson and Murdoch is out of money.
Right.
Which I wonder is if that's... Because I'm all for this show, if it needs to take a breather by going into the mundane.
The law.
Yeah, just like the day-to-day. I mean, I'm saying I want to see a 3-episode arc of them just, you know, paying their bills and stuff like that. But I think some of the, you know, Matt being a lawyer is kind of interesting, too.
Yeah, and if they can mix it with some high-stakes stuff, like maybe a case that depends on him being both Daredevil and also Matt Murdock,
yeah.
Lawyer.
Yeah.
Esquire. Maybe they could do something interesting.
It would be funny, though, if Matt starts rationalizing it. It's like, you know, Daredevil does provide an exclusive and prestigious service to the city of lowering the crime. And can we put a dollar figure on that? I mean, it's not like the city can have a special tax district or raise a levy for Daredevil services. So, like, what's to say if $10,000 goes missing out of, you know, a bank truck? That's like, okay. He needs to start skimming
right,
for his resources.
Right. One for me, one for you.
You know, he goes in hand with his drinking problem. He's, you know, he's in his cups and he starts thinking, you know, if you really think about it, I'm an extension of law enforcement and they get tax money. Why don't I get tax money?
Right.
Let's talk about this, the bat, and it doesn't help that they're getting paid in, like, chickens and pies.
Bananas.
And banana. Fuck you.
They go bad, like.
That's what I'm saying. The guy that is paying you 2 crates of bananas is just pissing in your mouth. Because those bananas, like, a pound of bananas is like 39 cents.
Right.
This guy owns a fruit stand and he's giving you the least desirable fruit and so much. What the fuck are you going to do with 2 cases of bananas before they go bad?
You got to eat like a maniac. I mean, you got to just plow through those bananas. You're right. I didn't think about how cheap bananas
are. I feel
like
you'd get banana-based dysentery if you ate that much. Like, it's just going to come out of you like a slurry.
Uh-huh.
That's not a good scene.
Over potassiumate yeah. your blood. That's yeah. not a word, but...
Yeah, it's going to make Deborah Wool's skin yellow and her eyes orange. No one wants to see that.
Nope.
But the actual assault on the Irish gang in Hell's Kitchen I thought was pretty nice. Because they set you up like you think this is going to be, you know, a Robert De Niro scene from The Untouchables. This is going to be this guy who's going to beat to death. And they do all the same notes. You think it's going to be the young punk who's got the drink, you know, that's had too much to drink. But it's actually the old war horse who's turned right. traitor on him.
And he was going to beat him, but
yeah.
didn't get a chance.
Although it'd be funny if, like, I assume that this is the Punisher. If he's outside and he's like, I'm going to let him beat him in the head a couple times before I take him out. But it's a brutal strike, and it's something like right out of the Punisher War Journal. Like, just people, blood going everywhere and full body explosions and... I quite like the giant, like, soup can size hole that they blew through to one guy.
What do you think about this rivalry, this kind of intrigue within the gang here? Like, I know
there's
all
a lot
of them get blown away, but it sets up potential conflict between a lot of different factions.
And there's a lot of hints and clues. Like, the one guy who was the traitor, I understood from Matt's eavesdropping on the investigation, was wearing a bulletproof vest.
Right.
Which would be very unusual to do on a very hot night when you're going to a friendly environment. Mm-hmm. Also, as soon as the Punisher gets done killing everybody, that guy's cell phone goes off.
Yes.
Which means, I don't think it's the Punisher. My first thought is like, well, did the Punisher tell him I'm going to clean house, wear a bulletproof vest, and you'll be fine? But then
or
I'm like,
maybe he was,
Why would the Punisher call him right after he killed everybody? Like, that's, so it's like, there's
if
a third.
If he intended to kill him, yeah, what's the point?
There's a third element here that we have not been introduced to. And I think, right. you know, I never know whether they intend us to catch all these clues and know that, or whether this is like, oh, did I just pick up the first of the 3-step reveal?
I think so.
But yeah, I don't know what it's about, but I did notice that.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lone survivor, and he goes to meet Matt and Karen and Froggy at the bar, and there's a scene where, like, Matt thinks he might be there to clean house, and it just turns out he needs legal protection. He wants to... trade the information that he knows to the DA for a witness protection deal, because he's in a situation where some ruthless gang is out to kill him. And also all of his people, since he's the lone survivor, are going to think that he is a rat.
Right.
And or a traitor. So he needs his protection. And he knows that Matt and Foggy have this sterling reputation for putting away Fisk and for being morally upstanding. And he appeals to them to kind of negotiate on his behalf.
Mm-hmm.
He also keels over because I guess he's... He got wounded in his lone survivoring.
Yep.
He also had a throwaway line where he says, "I can barely pay your fee," which I don't know why they threw that in there. And
it's pretty much par for the course for them.
Maybe it's because were they concerned that us as the audience would see this as Matt being desperate because of the previous scene establishing their heart up for money. Whereas when he says, "I can barely pay your fee," and the way his eyes were shifty, I think is to suggest that he cannot pay their fee.
Gotcha. And Matt knows that, and Matt, he's going to take it anyway.
Yeah. So it kind of Matt's trying to do, like, they're so concerned with us seeing him as a good guy that they can't even let a little bit of, oh, is there a financial motivation here?
And I think him doing his lie detector thing on the guy also helps that, because then you see that he's really trying to judge whether or not this guy is being honest with him. And when he finds out that he is, they kind of agree.
Yeah, no, for sure.
Although, I don't know if they agree before he keels over, but once he keels over, I think they agree.
Yeah. So, there's something else that Matt overhears when he's listening to this investigation of this this bar getting shot up, is that the Dogs of Hell got hit, and this was an even worse hit. So, that gives him something to investigate. And also Foggy offers to help because I guess he went to school with the Dog of Hell back in third grade.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Karen takes Grotto, which is this Irish thug's name, to the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And she spins this story about them being star-crossed Irish lovers, and this guy got into a bar fight and he got stabbed with the beer bottle. I guess my question is, if she did this as well as she did, how did the Punisher find them? How did Frank Castle?
I don't know. I couldn't tell you, but it didn't really bother me because, you know, superheroes always have their methods.
Well, but
their ways.
I'm trying to see, is there an implication that Frank has been following them?
Maybe.
And that implication means that he knows they're working with Foggy and Matt, and that implication might mean that he can figure out who Daredevil is quicker than we'd expect.
Yeah, could
because
be.
He already has kind of like a little tabs on these guys.
Mm-hmm. But I would expect the same of Daredevil, right? Like, he's gonna, now that he's seen this guy, he's probably gonna know a lot more about him very soon.
Man, I was thinking, because when he first woke up and he was in this hospital bed, but it was definitely a hospital bed, but it was very dark.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that maybe Karen had taken her to Claire.
Yeah.
And I'm like, holy shit, how does she know about Claire? Did Matt tell her about Claire? and then it's like, no, I guess it's just a really dark hospital room.
Right. You know, she goes in, she wants to get a little shut eye, she turns the lights down.
Because that would be interesting if Claire started like some kind of night clinic that's like an off the books thing that just caters to the Jessica Jones and the Matt the Matt Murdocks and their intended needs that they get into when they're up to these hijinks.
Superhero hospital.
Yeah, well, and not just that, but like, you know, I need this villain patched up and I can't take him to the hospital because then the cops would have him and they're just gonna fuck things up. So
I think it's a good spinoff, you know? We don't have enough spinoffs in this series, in this world. We need superhero hospital.
Superhero ER.
Yeah.
SHER. Sure.
Sure. Is that the acronym, or is that you saying good? Good,
S-H-E-R,
okay.
S-H-E-R. Good idea. Sure. Oh. Mm-hmm. That's a hell of an acronym.
Yep.
And you know what? Rosario Dawson strikes me. She's got the look of, like, a season 2 ER player.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. When you put her in Scrubs? Sure.
Yeah.
I think that's about right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. She's got that, like, she's completely believable in that role.
Right. Like someone really beautiful that you're trying to dress down.
Yeah. Yeah, like when they'd have what was that? Who's the girl's on The Good Wife? I can never remember her name.
I don't know her name, but I know
it's just a bunch of M words with some gills and Margula Googla Googla Goo. Margaret Martindale, Martin Michelle Magoogla Goo, I think is her name.
That's her name. Yeah.
She's got the really thick dark hair. That's the same. Yeah, it's like, you know, she's just a nurse.
Yeah,
she's not this super beautiful woman,
right?
And George Clooney, he's just a doctor.
Uh-huh.
he's not like as deaf.
No, Wiley. Sure, stick him in Scrubs.
Sure. Yeah, he's a first year medical resident. What the right. hell? What do you got? What do you want from me? So Daredevil decides to pay a visit to this arms dealer he knows because he hears high caliber military grade weapons, and he goes to this guy selling sawed off shotguns, whatever.
Yeah, he says his name, but I don't remember what it was.
Yep, man. I wonder if we'll see him again.
Yes, I think so. They made him out to be kind of a go to.
He's pretty funny scene because he's trying to sell these guys on pump action sawed off shotguns to fight against the Punisher, which, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
But Daredevil comes in. His opening move is to slam the guy's hands in his own trunk.
Ouch.
Which is pretty choice. And I realize in the scene what's bugging me about the Daredevil's mask. They've molded his eyes to be squinty. Like his right. eyes are narrowed, but they read to me as stoned. Because they're not narrowed in the way Batman's are. Like they're just like literally like they're molded in like you can see his fucking eyelids are molded on top of the shiny red shit, and it gives him a very like he's crawled into teepee and he's puffed on the peace pipe a bit.
Wow, I didn't notice, but I'll have to check that out.
That's what I just realized, and it's like that's what's bugging me. His squinty eyes are really, really not doing it. Especially since, like, if it was any other superhero, those red things would be gone and you just see his real eyes underneath it.
Yeah, of course.
But the squint with the mirrored surfaces, it's blowing my mind, man. I don't know. What were we talking about? We're talking about this guy who got his hands destroyed.
Yeah.
And then they tell us things that Matt probably should have already known at this point, like, hey, you took down all the controlling criminals, and what do you think is going to happen? There's a massive gang war. He speculates that there's a cartel out of Juarez that's bringing heavy-duty military-grade hardware in the meatpacking district.
Mm-hmm.
As we discussed, nothing good happens in the meatpacking district. At the same time, Foggy goes to the Dogs of Hell to see Schmitty, who is dead. He got killed in the raid, right?
I don't know. I don't know who Schmitty was.
Well, the only thing that frustrated me is that everything that Matt and Foggy finds out in their expeditions are things that they already kind of knew from the police investigation.
Okay. They knew about the Dogs of Hell, I guess.
And the fact that there was a hit, like, it's like, oh, well, we were on a heist, and we got hit hard and Schmitty. But, like, what of that information is actually useful?
Right. Where is that going to lead him?
Yeah, because you already knew like the Dogs of Hell were hit in a similar fashion, but slightly less severe fashion than the Irish gang. So where does it go to next? Or I guess Matt at least gets the meatpacking district out of the deal.
Yeah.
So he goes to the meatpacking district, and there are a lot of dead guys put up on meat hooks, which is always a horrifying scene. One of them is still alive. And so there's this thing where Daredevil's walking through these frozen or chilled lines of, you know, of pig carcasses and cow carcasses, whatever, meat. Hanging meat.
Mm-hmm.
Hanging meat. That's what the title of this podcast should have been.
Wow.
And I'm like, can we agree, I was talking to you, it's like, can we agree that if anyone ever sneaks up on a Daredevil, like if some dude pops out in the middle of these frozen cows and starts pounding them in his ribs, that we can call bullshit?
Rocky jumps out. Sylvester Stallone starts busting him up. Oh, I'm sorry. I thought, no, I just thought you were a pig.
That's right. But, I mean, he can't be snuck up on. This guy can hear a man's heart beating in a noisy bar.
Uh-huh.
And I get it's like he has to focus, but he's clearly going to be stretching his senses as he's creeping through this thing.
Yeah.
And I'm like,
see, that's where you get him. You have like a vuvuzela or something.
Sure.
And you wait for him to like reach out and try and just like scan the area. Mm-hmm. Then you hit him with a loud soccer hooligan yell and come charging.
Have one of those air horn things.
Yeah.
But so that doesn't happen. But he gets within 6 feet of a guy who's still breathing, and which means his heart's beating. And it kind of startles him. Like, oh my God, this guy's still alive. Like, what the fuck? Matt should have known that 60 feet ago.
Right. Right.
And I swear to God, I will turn on the show so fast.
Maybe his heart wasn't beating for a minute.
What? Daredevil's appearance just rescued and got him back to life? Or
you know, like, just he's clearly in a bad way here. So maybe his body's shutting down.
I guess if he's practicing some kind of Eastern medicine to where he's reduced his heart rate to give him the best chance to survive, like, yeah. And it's cold in there, sure. His body's gone into hibernation.
I don't know. I'm making excuses, but I get your point.
What I'm saying is, like, if there's ever a scene where Daredevil is creeping down a dark hallway and he is startled by something that's not a ghost, I will allow ghosts or zombies or, like, a Solomon Grundy.
Or a Prius, maybe.
I won't allow Solomon Grundy because he's on DC. But, like, something like that. Okay. If he's ever surprised by something that's not, that has a heartbeat, I'm going to be like, fuck, this is bullshit.
Right. In the right context, though, right? I mean, if he's distracted,
okay,
I would buy that.
But
yeah.
If he's creeping down a hallway, my thought is, if I'm a guy with supernatural senses, I'm going to have those things on full blast.
Yeah.
To try
I'm going
to
be sniffing around for cologne.
No
down
one
the halls.
Should ever get the jump. Yeah, and we know he can do these things.
Right.
He can smell cologne from six floors down in Rosario's apartment, you know, and God knows what people are cooking in that building.
Right.
They're boiling cabbage. They're making head mush. Who knows? Probably some meth.
Probably all of the above. It's Hell's Kitchen. It's
and
hot.
He picks out this guy wearing Stetson. Come on.
Yeah.
So we learn from this guy with this hanging on a meat hook that it's not a they, it's a him.
Which we already knew.
And then that leads to the Punisher scene that we already talked about.
Yeah, the great choreography. I mean, it's, you know, it's not episode 2 of last season quite,
right.
But it is a good fight.
It's a good fight.
Yeah.
Do you think that... Are you surprised that why do you think the Punisher was able to hand Daredevil his ass?
I think he surprised him. I think Daredevil's used to a one-man
Daredevil
fight just kicking his ass.
Daredevil sees a guy in a black trench coat with a gun, and he's like, I'm going to... It's like, you know... Because the Red Ninja last season, that was a prolonged fight that Matt eventually won. But, like, is the Punisher as good a hand-to-hand combatant as that guy? Or do you really do think it's an element of surprise?
It might be both. I mean, the Punisher might just be that good. I get the impression that he has military training. If he's got all this hardware, knows how to use it.
Yeah.
He's very well trained militarily, and that probably includes hand-to-hand combat.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm willing to buy that Punisher is just a really good fighter.
And also, to be fair, Daredevil picked himself up, spat out some blood, and then handed the Punisher his ass.
True.
The only way he won is with his holdout gun. Yeah. Well, you know.
Brought a gun to a fist fight.
It's arguable that Daredevil's cheating because he's got radar.
And he did kind of take a sucker kick, too, at the very beginning.
Well, he did give him... Oh, yeah, on the very beginning. But in the second round, he did the gentlemanly thing by giving a battle cry about 2 seconds before he struck. So
that's right.
Frank would have a chance to avoid getting the drop put on him. There you go. Bang.
Yeah, I'm glad it got off to as quick of a start as it did. Because I could have seen it drawing out a little bit more and then wasting more of my time with this he or they thing.
Yeah.
And I would have really been bummed. But now it's all bets are off, and I'm excited about it.
So did you read Alan Sepinwall's review after seeing, I think, the first 6 episodes?
No.
Alan Sepinwall says that the John Bernthal's Punisher is electrifying. But his complaint is that Daredevil and Matt Murdock specifically are boring.
Huh.
And this is something that he said from season 1, which so I didn't agree with. I didn't think that Matt and Daredevil, the character, was boring when he's and specifically boring when he's not throwing punches.
Mm-hmm.
And that the John Bernthal's Punisher blows him off the screen, which I'm fine with. Like if you got this you know, I'm a big fan of Mr. Bernthal from Walking Dead and from
a lot of movies he's been in that I've liked.
Yeah, he was. Wasn't he in
Wolf
of Wall
Street?
He was
some drug movie that I can't remember the name of with The Rock.
Yeah,
he was great in that.
He also played a lawyer on Show Me a Hero, which was kind of a different side of him.
Yeah.
So, and I can see him, like, if you imagine him a little bit more, like a more in control psychotic Shane from The Walking Dead, like that's essentially what you want from The Punisher.
Yeah.
So I can see him blowing Daredevil off the stage, and I'm fine with that. But I guess I never agreed with Sepinwall's analysis that Matt Murdock and Daredevil was boring when they weren't throwing punches. But I liked what's that guy's name? Charlie, the guy that plays Daredevil.
Is it Cox?
I actually like him as an actor maybe more than Sepinwall does, because I thought he was great in, I believe it was season 3 of Boardwalk Empire. He plays a starring role in that, too. He was like Nucky's right-hand Irish man.
Huh, that's right. I don't think it's going to be a problem because I view them, from what I know of this second season, I think the core tension that they kind of set up in the beginning is going to carry through, where Daredevil doesn't want to kill people, yeah. The Punisher does, and that's an interesting dynamic, and as long as they're holding up their ends of that, I'm probably okay with it. Yeah, Daredevil's boring because he doesn't fire guns and kill people and get up to all these crazy antics, but
yeah.
I mean, he's a lawyer, so he's a little...
I also got the impression from Sepinwall's review that he might be a bit of a Daredevil nerd.
Hmm.
In which case, you know, he's comparing with perhaps 20 years of comic book fandom with what's happening here and maybe dissatisfied.
Okay.
And the other thing is, like, he last year compared Jessica Jones and Daredevil and thought that Jessica Jones was the clearly superior comic book Netflix vehicle.
Oh,
which
man.
I don't strongly disagree, but I pretty much think that Jessica Jones was a weaker show structurally. It had, I mean, they both had higher highs and different, like this, the choreography yeah. on Daredevil, like, was hands, I mean, Jessica Jones almost had none. She just lay hands on a guy and throw him, and that was the choreography.
Yeah, I would dare to say the choreography on that show was borderline bad.
The final episode had some pretty solid.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
I
noped out somewhere around 10.
Yeah. It was, this is like when she finally went against another superpowered opponent, then she could kind of cut loose. Whereas before, she's
gotcha.
Just kind of like, you know, it's kind of like when you wrestle with a 3-year-old. That's
which I don't make a habit of.
No, but
let's be honest.
Well, you know,
I know you're a father,
sure.
So you have more reason to wrestle 3-year-olds.
Yeah,
than I do.
But that's like I felt like that's what it was like. She's like, you know, just that's how you just kind of play fighting with them.
Yeah.
But nah, I felt so. I kind of just go into this disagreeing with him, so it doesn't bother me that he's not exactly meh.
Right.
He's just like not quite as good as season one, and also the problems haven't been fixed, but I never saw the problems in the first season as actual problems.
I think there were small quibbles I had with the first season, but very small
I
overall.
Do think my standard criticism of all these Netflix series is they really need to trim the fat. I mean, Daredevil had an episode or two worth of fat.
Right.
Jessica Jones arguably had 4 or 5 episodes worth of fat.
Mm-hmm.
House of Cards suffers this way. Like, I don't understand this 13... episode. If you've got 10 episodes with the story, do it.
Right. When there's no pressure to hit like these cycles or like seasonal things
yeah.
or selling advertising, like
yeah.
none of that is a concern for Netflix. So it's surprising that they don't
yeah.
trim it up.
But no, I thought a pretty good start and surprising. Like the way it moved right into the Punisher plot. Didn't leave us hanging, didn't make that a couple episode mystery. It's just bam, front and center. But I am a little bit worried that how many episodes can they have these guys going against each other and both of them survive?
Right.
A little bit same way with Jessica Jones and the Kilgrave storyline.
Well, I do know some things about the rest of the season that I'm not going to talk about here, but that could keep the action going.
Okay.
So, I don't know. I'm excited. I think this show, I don't know. I really love season one. I think season two has a lot of potential. And this first episode kind of got the boring stuff out of the way, in my opinion.
Do you think there'll be a set piece episode similar to the second episode of last season where it's there's like going to be a signature stunt that everyone's going to be talking about?
I hope so.
I do too.
I hope so. It's a tough thing to match that first one, though. And I don't want
sure.
them to go for it and fail and it be obvious.
That's one thing I think Banshee's been really successful. Every season, subsequent season, has found a way to top the intensity of the fights from the season before.
Right. I think introducing a guy who uses guns might help
sure.
in that regard.
And the gun kata choreography was pretty sweet.
We didn't talk about that, but yeah.
Daredevil just coming within inches of getting his head blown off like 4 or 5 times. It's like fencing with a shotgun.
Yeah.
And I do openly wonder what a guy with supernatural hearing is going to do when a 12-gauge goes off inches from a skull.
I assume he blocks that out somehow.
I feel like that, yes, they've established that just by to survive, he has to be able to do that to some extent, but still.
I mean, physically, the vibrations on
the
his
blast,
ears would
yeah. And
cause
I wonder,
damage.
I noticed that in his helmet, And I don't know if this was the same as last year, probably. But they have these like cutouts for his ears that have like almost it looks like there might be active electronics in there.
I was thinking that too.
Like, yeah. I wonder if that, you know, the Forrest Gump armor stitcher that he's got, it has like put some kind of enhancements to where it's like welder's goggles. Like, you know, it lets him hear everything, but it's like just a sudden increase in intensity. It like dampens it.
Maybe. Could be like a 360 sort of thing. Like
it would be nice if they would add something like that. Like when he's wearing his helmet and a bomb goes off, it's going to protect his hearing, but it's also not going to obstruct it. Like it's some kind of noise-canceling thing to where it can protect his hearing selectively.
I do wish they'd play with that a little bit more.
Yeah.
Like play with the weaknesses of this superpower,
sure.
You know? And they really don't. They just kind of make him not have a weakness.
Yeah. Well, but it's
because of his blindness, you know?
It goes to extreme, like in the Ben Affleck version of Daredevil, it's like the guy's weakness is loud sounds. Well,
right.
It's too bad you're fighting in New York City because...
Yeah, there are no quiet parts.
And people are shooting guns and stuff at you. Like, you can't have your superhero wet in his bed every single time that, you know, someone tries to take a shot at him either. All right.
Yeah.
Shall we get to feedback?
Let's do it.
You can send feedback into daredevil@baldmove.com or on forums. I actually this morning took the trouble of creating 13 new show threads.
Jesus.
So they're all ready to go. We can all silo up the feedback. No one has to get spoiled. Forums.baldmove.com or daredevil@baldmove.com. First up, Chris P. Wants to talk about the Daredevil's fit in the overall Marvel Cinematic Universe. Daredevil is set within the MCU, as is Jessica Jones, the upcoming Luke Cage, and the Iron Fist series, all culminating in a quote-unquote Defenders team-up miniseries. Or made for Netflix movie, depending on which rumor is true.
Huh.
I kind of hope it's a made for Netflix movie. I didn't hear this rumor.
Okay.
This is the first news for me. And I think that's having a 13 episode of these guys palling around doesn't seem like it would work. But an annual team up movie that's 2 hours long sounds pretty tasty.
Okay.
Some say it's odd that these mature series take place in the same universe as the Avengers movies, but this is where I point out that the Marvel Cinematic Universe is modeled after actual comic books. Frankly, I'm very interested to see how Daredevil pans out in popularity as the series delves further into the mystic and away from the gritty crime drama aspects. But speaking as a diehard fan, I couldn't be happier to see these true representations of the characters and world I've loved my entire life. My ears perked up when he says, because I don't know much about Daredevil, he says the series delves further into the mystic. I'm scared because I think that's something that might lose you.
Also,
it's not something that I really like the gritty crime drama of this series. But I do know that the Marvel Cinematic Universe starting next year is going to feature fucking Doctor Strange.
I won't be checking that out.
Wizard Supreme.
Yeah.
You don't want to see Benjamin... Bender Dick comes a bunch in robes, Harry Potter robes,
is that
shooting
who it
spells.
Is? No,
yeah.
Fuck no. No.
What if he guest stars for an entire half season of Daredevil?
Oh, God. Fine, if they can keep it grounded somehow. I don't know.
I'm
not opposed to it. I just have no interest in it.
And that's like, is Daredevil got a mystic background? Or is it like Iron Fist has got the mystic background and he might have to die? Like, that's fine if you got some guy who's got a magic wand up his ass that you have to suffer through a movie or a buddy series every once in a while. But I don't know that I want Daredevil fighting even like ninja magic.
I think they should just do like a Mortal Kombat crossover and get like Scorpion in there. Get over here, Daredevil.
Yeah, if he's someone throwing a spear is fine.
If he takes
his skin off and he reveals his fiery skull and then, you know, consumes him with his demon fire. No, I don't want that in Daredevil.
I mean, they've essentially got Jax in there already with Luke Cage. So I'd say go whole hog.
Yeah.
Maybe get Ryu and Ken in there as well. A little Street Fighter action.
Sure. Luke Cage. I can already see it. Because he already had wasn't it Johnny Cage?
Yeah.
Luke Cage. It's Johnny Cage's brother from a different mother. Okay, Michael McBee is our other intrepid. You know, these guys all get up and watch this shit day one, same as we.
Apparently. I think they stayed up to watch it.
I was tempted. Because I had a late
4 a.m.
St. Patrick's
like
Day.
Like a couple hours away from.
It was about
an hour away
from 2:30 when I passed out last night.
That's when you start thinking about it.
I started having, yeah. I was like, you know what? I could push through, watch this, get a power nap, do the podcast, and then, you know.
Right.
Sleep as soon as, that would have been.
You made the right choice.
Thank you. I'm too damn old for that shit anymore.
Plus, you got to do lunch. You got to do
me being hungover and no sleep on a lunch might have been glorious, but it could have also been surly and defiant. Mm-hmm. Michael McBee said, Netflix is definitely the new AMC, right? They have a string of hits with Orange is the New Black, Jessica Jones, House of Cards, and now Daredevil. I got to say, I was pretty meh on the whole episode until the first hit we saw from The Punisher. It set us up for a possible threat of the season, till all of a sudden, as the episode is called, bang, how it ends. But I only got more interesting from there. We have the investigation that Matt and Foggy start. You can see where a new trope of the show is going to manifest, with Matt and Foggy going somewhere to talk to somebody, but not really talk to them, mm-hmm. only to have Matt listen in on what's going on around them. Then we had the introduction of the Punisher proper, and holy shit is he intimidating when you see his fully loaded glory. Oh, fully lobed glory.
I hope they do make that a trope, and every time he hears something kind of foul, like,
yeah.
Oh, guy went through body armor thick as my dick, next time it's like,
sure.
I don't know, oh, it will chap my fucking butthole, because yeah. This shit's gnarly.
Yeah, this guy's wearing a trench coat blacker than the inside of my ass.
Right.
Yeah.
Like every day, it just gets progressively worse. And by the end, Daredevil's kind of like, I don't know if yeah. I want to listen. This is the same cops from these last four
episodes.
Maybe
the cops know somebody's eavesdropping, so they're just making it so people have to projectile vomit when they listen to him. By the way, if you're just joining us, the Bald Move Industries, you are going to hear a lot of cracks about the Punisher's earlobes.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
And I'm going to go ahead and because something I notice watching The Walking Dead is that Jon Bernthal has abnormally large earlobes.
It's when, especially when he shaves his head,
they really pop. When
yeah.
he had the curly hair, it's kind of hot. There is like, you know,
a little.
It's like a bear hiding in the bushes. You couldn't see the full, but you know, you remove the bush and suddenly it's a grizzly bear coming at you.
Yeah.
And I'm not mocking the gentleman. He's a very handsome character. In fact, I think the source of his power and charisma is the lobes. It's like Samson.
Okay.
He stores, they swell with his magnetism.
Uh-huh. Imagine what he's going to look like when he's 80.
They're like a musk gland, you know? It's like they're just like, but yeah, anyway, people are going to be scratching their head wondering what the fuck we're talking about, but there was a whole long joke about Shane and his lobes.
Yeah,
and
go listen to season 2 of Walking Dead if you really want to know.
Yeah.
Or Watching Dead, rather.
Yeah. So there. Anyway, his fully lobed glory is showing that he may not be flat out as good at hand-to-hand fighter as Daredevil, but he's definitely a military-minded individual having a simple plan of attack, and when that falls through, he has a backup plan. Even after that goes bad, he's still prepared for Daredevil in one way or another.
Mm-hmm.
I agree. They're interesting yin-yang kind of thing.
Yeah.
In
a lot of respects.
And I'm almost wondering, because the other thing is, I know in the trailers we saw them having kind of monologuing at each other. And this first confrontation was so explosive, I wonder how they're going to plausibly slow it down to where they have a philosophical discussion about their differences and approach to the crime problem of Hell's Kitchen.
Right. I imagine we don't know a lot about what the Punisher is doing, what this guy in the black trench coat is doing. We know that he has shot up a bunch of gangs.
Yeah.
But what is his motivation?
Sure.
You know? And I think maybe that will come into play. Very soon. I imagine that's going to be one of the first things Matt kind of tries to figure out.
Yeah. Yeah. I was kind of, because when they first came into conflict, I thought that the Punisher was going to try to be like, hey, we're on the same side, man. Like, not get the fact that Daredevil is afraid to kill people.
Yeah.
But no, they didn't. They just went at it and the Punisher tried to kill Daredevil. So he doesn't have any kind of warm fuzzies about the good work that he's done so far.
Right. And it makes me wonder, like, are they going to have the Punisher kind of push Daredevil toward the killing direction? Like, is he going to try to get him to kill people?
Or I wonder...
Because you're right, Matt Murdock is afraid to kill people. Not,
yes.
Not un... He's only unwilling because he thinks it'll become too easy. Right?
Yeah, I think, like, he's got a little bit of that Batman thing going for him.
Yeah.
If I starts like if I slippery if I decide slope. To kill this guy, then the next guy is going to be even easier.
Yeah,
and pretty soon I'll just be preemptively killing everybody.
Yeah. So can the Punisher push him toward that direction? Maybe that'll be a conflict. I don't know.
I don't know. But also, I wonder from an origin story perspective whether like it'd be kind of cool if Daredevil's half measures. Like, let's say he beat up a guy, and that guy went on back on the street 6 months later, and he ended up doing something that caused Frank to lose somebody important. So it's like, is it a
Wow.
Is he actually, yeah. does he actually hate, because like, just whipping out a gun and killing the guy the first time you meet him, that is a pretty extreme reaction.
Sure.
It's almost like it's almost like he's like not like, hey, I've read this guy in the papers and I like what he's doing, but he doesn't go far enough.
Yeah,
it's like there's a personal thing like fuck you, man.
Okay, all right.
Or maybe he's just defending himself against a psychotic guy dressed as a devil.
Maybe
who knows? Is New York a standard ground?
Him in the head.
Is New York a standard ground state?
I don't know. I don't think so.
Hell's Kitchen's a standard ground neighborhood.
Hell yeah, it is.
They even have signs all over. All right, that's it. That's all we got for the first episode. We will be back Monday for episode 2. And every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, we're going to have a new episode for you for the duration of the Daredevil Crisis.
Yep.
Until the Daredevil Crisis abates, which we think is probably 13 episodes.
Until Hell's Kitchen cools off.
until we're done cooking and until we've wrecked the kitchen and we've destroyed our souffle. We'll be back every Monday, Wednesday, Friday. Send feedback to daredevil@baldmove.com or on forums.baldmove.com. And we will see you next week.
See you.